Across the Americas on Pan Am Sat and Galaxy, throughout Europe on the Astra satellite system, and around the world on shortwave and internet, this is the Dutch International Service. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Jonathan Marks and Diana Jansen.
Welcome to Europe's premier media show that looks behind the scenes at broadcasting. We think it's the best, but then I suppose we're biased because we have fun making it.
And we're just about to take the programme on safari. Next week the show will come from Luxembourg as we investigate what's happened to the great 208 and those programmes you used to hear deep into the night on 60-90 kHz. The station that boasted it was the most powerful on planet Earth has changed direction.
And looking further ahead, on July 13th we're planning a documentary about the role of radio in Africa. For instance, a few years ago, private stations sprang up in Mali. Everyone expected them to be bankrupt by now, but instead, radio is flourishing, but in an unexpected way.
And if the diary is still open, watch out for two special programmes starting on Thursday, August the 17th, the day that Indonesia celebrates its independence. Two-part documentary called Then and Now examines radio in Indonesia in 1945 and 1995. So mark that date in your diary.
A couple of points to add about the internet. Our contributor Tom Sundstrom has crafted a new electronic version of our publication that draws the link between computers and radio. It's on our worldwide webpage and it's called Info Dutch. Also new is a preview of this program, which I'm updating every couple of weeks, and a feature which explains what we're going to do next with the internet. Our address, as usual, is http://www.rnw.nl/rnw.
I love those addresses. But of course, we still read your letters and cards and also listen to the answer line. They're important to us too. Paul Ballester in London adds to the item from last week mentioned by Andy Sennett about Premier Radio. He notes there's actually a third outlet on 1332 kHz for central London. Don Rhodes in Yarra Glen, Victoria, Australia wants a mystery solved.
I have a query about your frequencies to the Pacific. I've noticed that 9720 is about half a second ahead of 9700. Both these transmissions are from Bonaire and satellite fed, I presume. So I wondered, I was wondering why 9720 would be a good half second ahead of 9700.
Thanks, Don. Sounds like he's calling from a phone box. There's a delay unit in the audio line to one of the Bonaire transmitters of about 400 milliseconds. We do that because when you get peaks in audio, such as a loud piece of music, the transmitter draws more energy from the diesel generators. If one transmitter does this a fraction of a second later, there's less of a power surge and thus a more efficient use of our diesel electric supply. So, what's a half second between friends?
Other news in brief. Here in Holland, the PTT, Quote Media and De Telegraaf newspaper, have launched large-scale internet access for the general public. You pay $20 a month for 6 hours of access. Meanwhile, in London, the BBC is in talks with CompuServe with a view to providing news and information to customers of this American online news provider.
In Israel, English programmes on shortwave are being cut back again. The 10 to 10.30 UTC broadcast is being scrapped as from July the 1st, but the 19 hours UTC broadcast is being restored to the full half hour. However, the feature programmes won't come back because Israel Radio is closing its English features department at the end of June. The future of all foreign language shows is being reviewed and more changes are expected in September. Back to Europe, and a group of stations including the BBC, RFI, Deutsche Welle and Radio Netherlands currently work on a programme exchange project called European Digital Radio. There's a strategy meeting in Hilversum today, at which it's been announced to call the project Radio E in future and open it to all members of the European Broadcasting Union.
Doesn't that mean there is a trend away from individual international broadcasters? I mean, you see smaller stations clubbing together and larger ones starting to talk more and more about their own region.
Yes, you're right. There's always a danger that when public money is tight, policymakers simply want to broadcast news about their own country, saying that regional news from other parts of the world is too costly to collect. It was a point that our correspondent, Victor Gunatilica, who lives in Sri Lanka, raised at the EDXE Denmark conference a few weeks back.
Jonathan, the whole idea of international broadcasting, I think, is not something unique. Most countries and most governments do a lot of things to promote international understanding, cooperation, massive aid being pumped into third world countries, and bilateral and multilateral trade agreements and friendship treaties and all that. So international broadcasting is, I believe, is also one part of that whole operation. A clear point some people were trying to make during the conference was that why should, for instance, Radio Netherlands or Radio Sweden make programs and even send correspondents on real documentary type trips out to Asia to do programming on India, Sri Lanka? What they say is, why not? Why should we do it? Let somebody else do it. Well, let me make it an analogy. You see, seven people got together and they said, let's make a nice pot of porridge for breakfast, we'll say. And each one had to put a handful of rice into the pot. So one by one, they went near the pot. They put their hand inside the pot and came back. And finally, when they looked at the pot, there was no rice. Everybody thought the other will put some rice and they can go on his whole operation. So finally what happened was nobody did anything. Now I wonder whether the international broadcasters are going to do that. Who is going to do it? If Holland pulls out, if Sweden pulls out, France pulls out, then there'll be a sudden vacuum of international cooperation, understanding and all what we stand for.
On the other hand, a lot of stations say, well, it's not so much that we're going off shortwave, we're going into other media. We're going into, for example, satellite delivery. Deutsche Welle, for instance, says it will start digital satellite transmissions to Asia once the AsiaSat 2 is launched.
Well, I firmly believe that it is the job of the international broadcaster to get to the homes of people. The way they do it is not the thing. So if satellite is going to be the answer, fine, excellent. I think we all have to accept that. But can satellites do it right now? When in most parts of the world, other than the Western world, people are struggling to make a living, living on a $50 budget for most of the time, and some people are starving the world over. And you think people can buy television sets and all the needed special antennas? Of course, they'll say direct satellite broadcasting and all that, but they already have some form of radio set which can pick up shortwave.
So variety is the spice of shortwave listening. The BBC, on the other hand, is apparently expanding its medium wave coverage in Asia to reach listeners with very simple radios.
They have hired their time on Radio Nepal, as you know, and also Radio Bangladesh, and recently, they were down in Colombo trying to buy time on the SLBC's transmitters. The SLBC, of course, is thinking of going on to FM countrywide. They were more or less thinking of scrapping the medium wave system, and the BBC is extremely interested. So they have been negotiating with the government to see whether they can take over some of the transmitters for relaying.
But nothing different yet.
Well, I don't think there's anything definite. From the newspaper reports, what's on the surface, there have been discussions, and we see that there are favorable signs from the government. But there seems to be a fair amount of stiff opposition from the station itself, certain quarters, and political circles.
Which is perhaps not surprising, because the BBC was a domestic broadcaster during the colonial days. Meanwhile, before Victor left Sri Lanka on his trip to Europe, he did manage to do some listening.
Oh yes, it has been a hectic time for me getting visas and running around Colombo. Anyhow, there are two or three things I noticed. I suddenly noticed that Radio Singapore, the new transmitter carrying the Chinese service on 6,000 kilohertz, has gone off there. I don't know whether they have taken it off completely or whether it's maintenance. It's a new transmitter, brand new transmitter. So, but anyway, for the last 2-3 weeks, it's completely off 6,000 kilohertz. But 6155, the English service, continues up to sign off at 1605. Then the Radio Singapore International operation goes very strong. Signals are very good from 12 hours to 14 hours in English, 9530. So that's what I noticed about Singapore. And also, Radio Thailand is back on 9690 to Asia, English. That's midnight to midnight 30. And this created tremendous interference to Radio Veritas to Sri Lanka on 9695. So a quick move was made to 9670. So that's Radio Thailand in English, midnight to midnight 30, 9690, and Radio Veritas, Sinhala to Sri Lanka, 9670, midnight to midnight 25, to get away from Radio Thailand.
And finally, one more.
Yes, I was quite thrilled to hear a very strong signal from Vientiane Laos. Just before I came, they have been putting in a fairly thin signal, but a booming signal at 1400, the frequency is 6130.
I was talking there to Victor Gunatilaka.
Radio Netherlands, not just an enormous transmitting facility, but a radio station with a damn good cafeteria, fresh soup every day, and lots of polite conversation.
And other good stuff.
Oh, good gracious. Yeah. Actually, the soup's quite nice here in the studio.
That's good.
Yes. Right. On the line we have Chris Greenway from BBC Monitoring. Chris, what's going on in the world of international broadcasting? A lot of cutbacks, aren't there?
Yes. Very interesting and very historic occasion earlier this month. 3rd of June was the final date of broadcasting for Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty from Munich, ending over 40 years of broadcasting from that city. And all transmissions have now been transferred to their new studios in Prague, from where, in fact, they'd begun broadcasting in March of this year, and they've had a three-month transition period to move from one center to the other. In the process of moving, they've actually appeared to have made quite a bit of a cutback in their output. They're now announcing that they're on the air in for a total of 724 hours a week, which is still quite a lot in the international broadcasting stakes. But in fact, it's a considerable cutback from earlier this year when, according to schedule they provided to us, they were on the air for well over 900 hours a week. And it means that they've fallen back behind such broadcasters as China Radio International and the BBC. They're still ahead of Deutsche Welle, and of course they're still greatly ahead now of the Voice of Russia, which used to be in the top spot, but has now fallen back to less than 600 hours a week.
Good gracious, it's getting pretty empty on the bands. We notice reports from people saying that indeed the summer conditions have been a bit disappointing. They expected it to be a bit better than it was in the winter, even though we got the very low sunspot numbers. On the other hand, it does mean to say that certain times of day you can hear unexpected stations.
That's right, and one evidence of the really very, very low sunspots we've got at the moment is reception of Ethiopia. A colleague of mine noted that Radio Ethiopia was in fact being heard on 9705 kilohertz, which is its domestic service, quite late in the morning. In fact, they have an English program between 10:30 and 11 o'clock, and he was hearing that quite well. And then at 11 o'clock, they begin their transmissions of their external service on 11800 and 9560, and both of those were audible as well. Now, in other years, this would be really thought of as completely impossible. These frequencies are far too low to propagate from that part of Africa to Western Europe in effectively the middle of the day and in summer as well. And it means that there's an opportunity to receive this country, which is not often well heard in Europe, given that it doesn't operate on the tropical bands, but only broadcasts on shortwave in the international bands, which means that either during the day there's simply no propagational path open for it to be heard, and during the evening when the path is open, those bands, of course, are full of other things.
Well, finally, closer to both of us is, in fact, obviously the tragedy of what's going on in former Yugoslavia, and Sarajevo's in the news at the moment, actually on the teletext at the moment. From the radio point of view, what's going on?
Well, of course, we are here keeping a very, very close watch on the broadcasting scene in Bosnia-Herzegovina. We're watching the broadcast by the government side, by the Bosnian Serbs and by the Bosnian Croats. News from the government side, Radio Bosnia-Herzegovina, which is the government station based in Sarajevo, they've got a new shortwave transmitter. We first heard it towards the end of May, and later the station in an announcement confirmed that it had got this new transmitter, which it said was 10 kilowatts in power. And it broadcasts on 7105 kilohertz. Now, this actually happens to be very close to a frequency which they've been using for some time now with their old transmitter, which broadcast on the upper sideband with a reduced carrier, so it was AM compatible. But the interesting thing is that they've actually left this old transmitter on, and both transmitters are now broadcasting pretty well 24 hours a day, as far as we can ascertain. One of them on 7105 and the other one on 7108. So if you have a fairly wide bandwidth on your receiver, they're both actually interfering with each other. And to add to the confusion, for quite a considerable period in the morning, Deutsche Welle is broadcasting in Serbo-Croat on 7105. So on that channel, you've actually got three stations all broadcasting in the same language, two of them from the same studio, as it were, and sort of all causing interference with each other.
There seems to be another strange confusion going on elsewhere on the dial. Back to the answer line.
This is John Mainland, Wellington, New Zealand. Doha, Qatar was noted 13th of June on 11785 kilohertz, seemingly replacing 9585. The signal was heard 0241 sign-on until 0355 UTC co-channel with Deutsche Welle Cologne. After 0355, the station was clear of interference.
This is Media Network, covering the full spectrum of the world of radio in a form easy to digest.
Now let's look ahead to a radio development which may get big. Over the years, there's always been an interest in broadcasts originating from Europe's smaller states. Some of the most commercially successful must be from Luxembourg. Andorra used to have shortwave broadcasts, but they've been silent for some time. And in the 1930s, there were plans to put Liechtenstein on the map. But so far, this tiny state between Austria and Switzerland doesn't have its own radio operation. But that will change. Wolf Harrant's been investigating the slow progress.
My personal opinion is that they lost the battle of time. Initially, they wanted to set up a shortwave station like Luxembourg, right from the heart of Europe. Well, with the decline of shortwave, and they probably also found out that Europe cannot be really covered from inside Europe, they had to abandon that. Then they wanted to make use of the five allocated orbit positions for satellites. Here again, the infight with the Swiss Telecom for independence of Liechtenstein Telecom took longer than Astra took to set up the European standard. Now, it all came down to run a private commercial FM station, since here again they had long struggles, should this be a private or public radio? It was decided in the long run that this should be a private station, and they had problem in financing it. They didn't want to take up a credit. They wanted to distribute shares. People weren't interested enough. So, okay, after a long, long, long time of waiting, they will now start on the 15th of August, which is their national holiday. They will broadcast on six FM frequencies. This is important because it's an alpine region. They need six frequencies just to cover that tiny spot, and it will be largely a station for the 58,000 Liechtensteiners, because in between, private commercial radio was established in Switzerland, was established in Germany, and will be established beginning of September, probably in Austria. So they lost the market. What they plan to do is to get more powerful transmitters, to get better frequencies, to become something like a regional broadcaster, to reach out into other countries, and then it will be easier for them to convince, don't forget Liechtenstein is an economic giant, to convince all these letterbox firms there to sponsor adverts.
But do you think they'll actually then, when you say a regional service, how will they do it, by high-power FM, or will they use a satellite service, or what?
Well, their plans are high-power FM, medium-wave, short-wave, and satellite, but I would say it's just plans. They took 15 years to set up an FM station. They will probably take another 15 years to go on satellite, and who knows what will be happen then.
What's it going to be called and what languages will they use?
It's called Radio L, L standing for Liechtenstein, or Radio Liechtenstein. And they will broadcast both in Liechtenstein dialect and in German.
And if you're looking for it on the map, remember that Liechtenstein isn't a very big place.
They have about 58,000 inhabitants. And if you drive through by car, it takes you about 5 to 10 minutes.
Wolf Harrant. Someone who always has plans up his sleeve is broadcast consultant Paul Rusling. For several years, he's been trying to get a medium wave station on the air in Lithuania with pop music for Scandinavia under the name Radio Baltic International. We understand that project's on hold at the moment, waiting further finances. Meanwhile, Paul's busy with another project, this time on the Isle of Man.
Yeah, the Isle of Man is a pretty unique country on its own. It is an independent sovereign nation. It's separate from the UK. It's Great Britain is in fact the UK plus the Isle of Man. And the Isle of Man has for many years tried to have its own international service. Obviously these have been private broadcasters wanting to broadcast to the UK and clean up by becoming a sort of mini Radio Luxembourg. 2 years ago, there was a bid to buy Manx Radio from the Isle of Man government, and this ended in a huge committee of inquiry, which recommended, and the recommendation has since been adapted by the Isle of Man government, Tynwald, that Manx Radio would not try and broadcast internationally. It would become a national radio service for the Isle of Man only. And or some people would say a local radio service for the Isle of Man, but a Manxman would say a national service. So that said to me, well, here's an opportunity. And I held discussions with people in the Isle of Man government for almost a year, and they've now agreed that we can run an international radio station from the island, providing we can persuade the British authorities who control frequencies for the whole of Great Britain to give a frequency to the Isle of Man. We've constructed a case using lawyers and all kinds of technical experts, which was presented to the British Department of National Heritage, who set broadcasting policy for Great Britain for the government. And we've suggested to them that they should relinquish a frequency which was granted to Britain at the last WARC in 1975 conference it was, which came into power in 78, or came into force in 78. And that was 225 long wave, which Britain was given as a low power fill-in for BBC Radio 4 in Scotland. By some technical jiggery-pokery at Droitwich, they found they could make Radio 4 longwave have a slight elliptical coverage and cover Scotland quite well, so 225 was never used by the BBC, and it's just been wasted ever since. It was used for many years by the Polish station, the Polish national station, until their tower fell back in 1991. For various reasons, which no one's ever talked about since, but I think certainly tied into the fact it was at the time of the coup. I don't believe in coincidences. That was one of the best engineered towers in the world, and for it to fall during the coup is too much of a coincidence for my feelings. They haven't yet rebuilt that, and I don't think they have either the willpower or the money, certainly, to rebuild that station in Poland, and that really makes the frequency a more attractive proposition. Basically, we would use that frequency to transmit an international station from the Isle of Man. This isn't just to broadcast to the UK, it's to broadcast to Ireland and also the Low Countries. Our main contractors, who are the Marconi Company, have already produced the coverage patterns, and they show that the signal will be very listenable across northern France, Belgium and Holland, and into Denmark too.
And what will it put out, music?
That will be decided eventually by research immediately before we go on the air. But yes, it will be a music-based service. It must be to attract a viable audience, because, of course, at the end of the day, we have to pay for the station. It's, again, an expensive project. Costs millions and millions of pounds or dollars, whichever way you look at it. And the only way you can get that back is really from advertising. The Isle of Man government isn't going to pay for such a station. I don't have that much in loose change in my pocket, nor do our investors. So we're looking to advertisers, and that must mean music. The exact type of music will depend on what the target audience, who are generally housewives aged 25 to 50, which we feel are an unserved niche market, particularly in the UK. They're the people who listened at one time to Radio 1. Radio 1 has changed format recently. It now has an avowed, a declared policy of not playing any music less than more than 4 years old. The ILR stations are concentrating on hit radio or gold radio, which appeals to people over 40 or 50. It's not exactly a baby boom market, but listeners from 25 to 40 who grew up with personality DJs in the 60s and 70s now don't really have stations appealing to them. That's the audience we'll be going for.
Does the project have a name?
No, it doesn't have an on-air name yet. The licence company is Celtic Rose Radio. The Celtic is obviously the Isle of Man link. The Rose is because our backers come from Yorkshire and Lancashire, and we are the counties of the Roses. And so Celtic Rose was the company which has done all the work. But I would imagine the name, the eventual name of the radio station is going to have 225, the dial position on it. We're emulating Atlantic 252 to some extent. We're going to be Atlantic 252 for grown-ups, which is not a derogatory description of Atlantic 252 by any means. But Atlantic 252, when it launched in 89, they had a big problem for the first 6 or 9 months. And they realised after about month 9 that the reason was people didn't know where to find the station. And they then began announcing as part of... They made it part of the name. Instead of just Atlantic 252, it's now Long Wave Radio Atlantic 252. You really do have to tell people... They're not aware of the cornucopia of stations. They really are dotted all around the dial. They just don't know where to find them.
The British authorities haven't yet granted a long-wave licence for the Isle of Man. The decision is due in the next couple of weeks. Paul mentioned Manx Radio's involvement, so we called them.
Manx Radio, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can I speak to Stuart Watterson, please?
Hold the line.
Stuart is Managing Director at Manx Radio.
We had a meeting with Paul Rusling. He visited the island, this will be sometime last summer, probably about a year ago now. I met with him. He had met with local politicians and people to do with broadcast regulation in the island. The meeting I had with him yielded a picture of an idea to produce long-wave broadcasting out of the island and a desire to utilise joint facilities with Manx Radio. But I've not spoken with the chap since that. This would be about a year ago.
Presume the idea then is that the long-wave frequency allocated to the UK would somehow be transferred to the Isle of Man?
My understanding was that, yes, the UK has two registered long-wave channels. One is a traditional Radio 4 channel, the other being presently unallocated, or unused, rather. And there have been many ideas and suggestions over the years about activating that channel. And the idea was that it could be, in principle anyway, moved to the Isle of Man and transmitted from here. Of course, there are many environmental problems to take into account in such a move, not least of which is where you put a 1,000-foot transmission mast on an environmentally sensitive island. But these were just a loose conversations at the time, and they've not materialised into anything.
Would you personally expect anything to come of it, bearing in mind that, for example, you've got successful stations like Atlantic 252 operating out of Ireland?
Well, that's right. Atlantic certainly have a very, very strong signal across the Isle of Man. But Atlantic, of course, has shown that what most people in broadcasting thought of as long wave being dead, they've demonstrated the old American principle that it's the program content that attracts their listeners rather than the medium. So Atlantic has certainly proved that you can attract a listenership on long wave. But I would have felt that trying to put long wave transmission facilities in a place like the Isle of Man with, as I said, environmental sensitivity is going to be a major hurdle, quite irrespective of the viability or otherwise of the broadcasting aspect.
One final question about how Manx Radio gets its frequencies. I mean, do you have to apply to the British authorities like UK local radio stations?
Well, the Manx Radio is unique within the British setup in that it's really represents the third transmission function within the area that Great Britain is responsible for. We have the BBC, we have the ILR setup, and then we have Manx Radio. So our transmissions are licensed under United Kingdom Wireless Telegraphy legislation. But the actual transmission content, the programme content, is licensed under Isle of Man broadcasting legislation. So we're a bit of a hybrid in that sense. So we don't fit comfortably into the British pattern, but for political and constitutional reasons, the Isle of Man is subject to the dictates of Westminster when it comes to the technical aspect of licensing the transmissions.
Do you actually aim further afield than the Isle of Man? I mean, you have a medium wave frequency, if I remember rightly, on 1368.
That's right, yeah. Well, as is in the nature with radio transmissions, that transmission is receivable outside the island, but it's marketed simply in the island. There was a period of a 12 years ago when we did start to market it in the coastal areas on the periphery of the Irish Sea. But for reasons which I suppose are political with a small p, in the sense that it is an important service in the Isle of Man, and people in the island are jealously possessive of it, and didn't like the idea of Manx Radio being a much broader regional entity. They preferred it as their own national radio station for this small nation of the Isle of Man, and we reverted to broadcasting on both AM and FM to the Isle of Man. That's the way it is at the moment.
Lovely story. What's the weather like at the moment?
Glorious.
Well, further east here in Hilversum, summer has officially started, at least in theory. On the line we have our propagation specialist, Mike Bird. Mike, what's the weather like in Melbourne?
It's cold and it's winter.
But the sun has been active in terms of affecting the ionosphere. Give us the details of the last 7 days.
Solar activity continued to be very low, and the geomagnetic field was a little disturbed from late on Sunday through to Tuesday. The solar flux started the week at 76 on Saturday and Sunday. It reached its low for the week at 70, and by Tuesday it had risen to 72. The average works out to 71.8, which equals an effective sunspot number of 7, which is down on the previous week's level of 23. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 4 and 24, which represents quiet to active conditions. The magnetic field was quiet to unsettled until late on Sunday, when a coronal hole on the sun switched on earlier than we forecast and produced active conditions through to Tuesday.
Right, and what about between now and next Thursday, June 29?
IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain very low. The geomagnetic field should be quiet to unsettled until Monday, when we expect another coronal hole will produce active to minor storm conditions until Tuesday, and then active to unsettled conditions on Wednesday.
And that's all for now from the Media Network team around the world, and Deanna and myself.
Have a pleasant weekend.